It's Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Stand by for adventure in this hour. Later on, it's the Bogart and Bacall series, Bold Venture. But first, Orson Welles, stars in The Lives of Harry Lime, a syndicated episode from the 4th of April, 1952, called Fool's Gold.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Now, right from the very outset, friends, I want it clearly understood that I do not believe in Santa Claus. If a man offers to sell me a gold brick, I do not reach for my billfold, except to make sure I still have it. Nevertheless, when I sat down in the bar of the George V in Paris not so long ago, I'd have sworn I'd met Santa Claus at last. Nor did he offer me fool's gold. What he offered was the real thing, gold from fools. It began, as I told you, in the bar of the George V in Paris. Ironically, I hadn't even wanted to meet the man. I hadn't wanted to see him at all when he called to make the appointment. I was even rude to him.
So, Monsieur Lime, your health?
A la vôtre.
Perhaps if I came quickly to the point.
Good, I hope you do.
As you know, Monsieur, gold as a commodity is worth 35 American dollars the troy ounce on the controlled market.
Naturally.
Unfortunately, it can be disposed of at far greater prices in the Orient. As high as $60 the troy ounce will be paid in Karachi or Goa or Bombay or Macau or Hong Kong.
That's all very, very interesting.
Please.
But,
I will make myself clear in a moment.
I hope so.
Let me suggest, Monsieur, that there are at least three West European governments which would be happy if they could purchase more gold at the regulated price.
Well, they'd sleep better at night, would they?
Precisely. But if those who mine the gold in South Africa, in South America, and elsewhere, if they can dispose of their product for more, why should they sell it in Europe? Not to keep secrets from you, Monsieur Lime, there is a shocking condition. One blushes to report it. Gold is being smuggled east.
Smuggled?
East through Beirut and the Persian Gulf, east to India and Hong Kong.
What some people will do for money. It's
it
shocking,
is, as you suggest, a distressing practice.
Yes.
As you can imagine, there are certain European governments which would look very kindly on any efforts to halt the smuggling.
Mm.
If, for instance, the smugglers were made to realize that the enterprise was a very risky one. If they were to discover that occasionally their shipments did not get through to India as planned.
Well, my dear sir, are you suggesting that I hijack these smuggled gold shipments? And besides, how could it be done?
Oh, very easily. You see, the usual route for the smugglers is from Beirut by chartered plane to a small sheikdom on the Persian Gulf called Kuwait.
Hmm.
Here the gold is dumped out on the sand. No armed guards. The sheikhs in Kuwait presently have it carried to small craft, dhows, in the harbor. And thence it is sailed east to Karachi or Goa, Macau.
No armed guards?
Ridiculous.
I see. Well, my friend, I'm afraid your little ideas.
Monsieur Lyon, perhaps you have not understood me.
Understood, sir.
If anything should happen to a shipment of the smuggled gold, it would be understood that all money the gold brings in the Indian market would belong to the man responsible for any accidents to the smuggled shipment.
Yeah? All the proceeds?
All.
Just where exactly is this sheikdom of Kuwait? Now, here was an undertaking designed to my own personal specifications. All the way to Beirut, I purred in my aeroplane seat like a tabby being presented with a bowl of clotted Devonshire cream. And in Beirut, I made allies with two likely specimens. One was called Clancy, a rascally Irish aeroplane pilot, and the second, Singh, an equally rascally Lascar sailor, both of them familiar with Kuwait. I remember both of you. From now on, I am Dr. Harrington Lyme, FRCS, well-known archaeologist, right?
Whatever you say,
Harry. Singh, you leave at once for Kuwait and hire a dhow. Clancy here and I'll give you a head start. Then we fly to the airport, where we'll have to land because of engine trouble. I am an archaeologist looking for likely ruins to dig up. Clancy, you'll not be able to fix our engine until the moment there's a big shipment of gold lying on the sand by the airport.
This begins to sound interesting.
At that point, you tell me the engine is all right again. I arrive, change inside the plane to the clothes of a native. Singh drives a cart up, and he and I load the gold shipment into the cart, drive it down to the docks, dump it into the dhow, and sail 100 miles down the Gulf.
Where I meet you with the plane.
Right. We fly on to Karachi and sell it.
Why not?
And a quarter share for each of you fellas when it's sold in Karachi, right? The grapevine had news of a rich, fat shipment of gold due into Beirut in a matter of days. We gave Singh a head start, time to get us the dhow and get it ready. And then Clancy and I took off for Kuwait. 5.5 hours. Across the deserts and mountains of the Middle East. Then our C-43 was circling above an airfield. Can you make your motor miss, Clancy? Make the landing look good and necessary?
Right.
Heat reached up and met us, swallowed us. Clancy went away to report his engine trouble and ask for parking space, but he's back in a few minutes.
Hey, Harry. Plane due in tomorrow with a consignment for the Sheikh Sir Sulayman Alhamad bin Taimur.
Well, so what?
I know him, that's what. He's the biggest man in the gold business here in Kuwait. It must be the shipment we heard about back in Beirut, don't you see?
And tomorrow, huh? Well, we'll have to work fast. And this heat, too. You stay here and fuss with the plane. I'll get into town, buy some native clothes, and contact Singh.
You got the name of that waterfront place he's staying at?
Yeah, don't worry about me. Well, if it was hot on the airfield in the town, in the native bazaar where I went to buy my second-hand native clothes, it broiled and sizzled. Even down at the waterfront where I looked up Singh, the breeze off the Gulf didn't relieve the torment. Singh was already. Then back to the town's best hotel, carrying my package of clothes. The town's best was a glum hostelry with a villainous-looking clerk. I handed him my card, the one I had specially printed, describing myself as an archaeologist. Who better to pass the word around about me than this clerk?
Yes, sir, Dr. Lyme. You want rooms, fine suits, running water, hot and cold, cross-ventilating.
Cross-ventilating.
Very fine suits. Sign here, please.
I leaned down, signed my name, and then straightened again, glancing over my shoulder. And that was when I saw her.
Luggages, sir. You have luggages, no doubtless?
Our eyes met. She stood quite still, grave, returning my look.
Dr. Lyme, where are your luggages, sir? Just only this bundle?
That woman, who is she, old man?
Nice, isn't it?
Very
that
nice.
Is Falura. Falura, she is a dancer.
Falura? That would have been pleasant, but then I thought of the gold of the day's work ahead, and I turned toward the elevators. But just before I reached them, she was at my side.
After looking at me the way you did just now, you turn and leave?
Your name is Falura, isn't it? Well... Why are you here in Kuwait?
I've been waiting, perhaps, for you.
Well, you're staying here at this hotel? I'll call for you this evening.
Not this evening. This evening I am engaged. But I shall see you tomorrow evening.
Well, it's too late. I'll be gone. I'm sorry.
So, I think you will wait for me.
She turned and walked away. She didn't look back. I watched while she went out and down the steps and into a limousine that was waiting at the door. It was too bad. Had meant for the gold that would lie waiting on the airfield beside the strip tomorrow morning.
Dr. Lyme, sir.
Oh, it's you. Well, what do you want?
An invitation has come for you, sir. The Sheikh throws big party tonight.
Oh, Sheikh? What? Who is this Sheikh?
Well, Sheikh Sir Sulayman Alhamad bin Taimur.
Sheikh Sir Sulayman.
This invitation says be ready outside hotel at 9, Dr. Lyme. His car will meet you up and carry you.
Well, the Sheikh's limousine deposited me at the entrance of an elegant and palatial residence in the hills above the harbor. The man at the door took my hat. Inside, I was left to my own devices, looking about for my host, when suddenly I discovered why it was that Falura had said she could not see me on this night. She was here. She saw me and moved over.
I am happy you were able to come. Now you know why I could not be alone with you tonight.
You're dancing here tonight?
Later. And while you're watching me, remember, tomorrow night we will be together.
Well, now, really, Flora, I'm afraid that won't be possible. You see,
At first, I thought you were an English lord when I saw you back at the hotel.
Oh, I'm not.
Now I have learned that you are only a scientist. What is it?
Archaeologist.
Archaeologist, yes.
Archaeologist. Now, about tomorrow night, believe me, Flora, I couldn't be sorrier, but...
Excuse me, it's Dr. Lyme, the Sheikh. Sir Suleiman, he would meet
you. You are wrong to worry, handsome one. If Flora does not worry about your poverty... Why should you?
Well,
Now, go. Talk about your science with the Sheikh.
Yes, the Sheikh, Sir Suleiman.
My science with the Sheikh? Why with the Sheikh? What do you mean?
You didn't know that the Sheikh is one of the most passionate amateur archaeologists in this part of the world?
An amateur archaeologist?
But what is the matter?
Well, suddenly my head. I've got a splitting headache, Flora.
Sir Lyme, please. The Sheikh awaits you.
Yes, but I've got this headache. Of course, I know he does, but you'll just simply have to take apologies. My apologies to the Sheikh. It's the heat. Which way is the door?
My handsome one, go quickly home. Be good to yourself.
Oh, I will, dear.
Until tomorrow, in the cool of the evening.
But it wasn't in the cool of the evening when I saw Flora again. It was in the heat of the morning, just as I was checking out of the hotel, and when I had only gold on my mind.
Where do you go so early, handsome one?
Well, I'm leaving, Flora. I'm leaving Kuwait.
It is not possible.
Well, I tried to tell you. Twice I tried to tell you that I simply have to leave today by plane for India.
Then I go with you.
Flora, my lovely Arabian moonflower, listen to me.
Oh, the first pretty thing you have said to me. I shall treasure it.
Well, go right ahead and treasure it, honey. But now, goodbye. You're not coming with me. I'm going alone. Goodbye.
No, wait. Is it my same handsome one? Can it
be? Well, you're not coming to the airport with me, Flora.
Even to kiss you goodbye? How can you refuse? Say, au revoir.
Okay, and also, goodbye. Flora was certainly beautiful, but beautiful or not, Flora had begun to get on my nerves. Nothing could have been worse than to have her around the way she was, waving to me. Just when I was busy slipping into my native clothes and signaling to Singh to approach with his card and slipping back out of the plane again, hoping that no one in the control tower had noticed, making my way with Singh to the crates that lay unguarded and defenseless, ripe for the plucking under the broiling sun.
Oh, they're heavy, Harry.
Don't complain of their weight, old man. Remember, the heavier they are, the richer we shall be. Anyone around?
No one. This heat, not even a mad dog, my friend. Certainly no Englishman.
Then into the cart with these crates. The guards were with us. Why should anyone stop two native Arabs from loading crates into a native cart? What could be more brazen and therefore seem more innocent?
Go on, you lazy devil! Malak! Malak!
Off the airfield, with Singh laying his whip across the backs of the two plodding, sweating beasts into the town and then down toward the docks. By mid-afternoon, we were out in the Persian Gulf, out and away and cool. And so far as I could see, utterly unsuspected. For the airport officials knew that Dr. Harrington Lyme had flown off at 1 o'clock bound for India. And they never guessed that his plane, only 200 miles out of Kuwait, would put down, refuel, and be loaded with a heavy and priceless cargo before heading in earnest for India.
I feel better now. Almost weren't airborne back there. That's too heavy a load for safe flying, Harry.
You too, Clancy. You too.
Me too what?
Well, like Citizen Singh back there, you complain of the weight of our payload? Suppose, Clancy, just suppose that we finally were able to tuck inside the plane weighs half a ton. How much would you say it'd be worth?
Half a ton of gold? How should I know, Harry?
Your guess, Singh.
$50,000? $100,000?
At Indian prices, we might get enough to buy 1 million American dollars, my pessimistic papoose.
That's much.
We'll see when we find our buyer in Karachi.
Why not in Goa, Harry? I heard of a man in Goa, a Portuguese named Peranda, who buys gold.
Karachi, Clancy. When we find a buyer in Karachi, what I said. When is what I said, but if was what I was thinking. Would it be so easy to sell a half ton of fine gold? I didn't know. Never sold a half ton of gold before. I could only guess. But before I left Europe, I'd taken the name of an Indian merchant in Karachi who could be approached. Okay, Clancy, everything clear?
Sure pop, Harry.
I just want to visit this guy first and make sure he's the man for us. I should be back inside an hour. Don't let anyone near the plane.
Trust me, Dr. Lyme.
I will, old man. And I did. I did trust him, and that's where I made my mistake. Took me an hour to find my merchant in the city, 10 minutes to find that I had a man who'd make a quick and profitable deal, and half an hour to get back to the airport, all singing, all talking, all dancing.
You, Dr. Harry Lyme?
That's right.
This note's for you.
Note? Note from whom?
From a pilot named Clancy. He left it just before he took off.
Before he took off?
Yeah, he took off about 20 minutes ago. Said you might be looking for him. Here's the note.
Harry, Thing and I decided what's the use of 25% for each of us. We decided 50% for each of us is twice as nice. You can see that, can't you? Clancy had urged me to fly not to Karachi, but to Goa. Goa, he'd said. He knew a man in Goa who'd buy the gold, a Portuguese called... what? Blindly, I made my way through the groups of tourists and travelers in the airport terminal building. How long would it take Clancy to fly to Goa? He had a 20-minute start. I had to charter a faster plane. I must think. Now, what was that Portuguese's name? Where can I...
Dr. Lyme. Oh, my handsome one, I've found you again.
Oh.
Harry, I shall call you Harry.
Now, listen, Fuller, I'm really very busy. I haven't got time for...
After you had left me, I thought, handsome one.
Piranda, that's it, that's the name.
What? Whose name?
Piranda.
Where are you going? Harry!
Piranda. Hurrying through the terminal, I headed for the office of an airline's dispatcher. Piranda, that's the name. Maybe, I thought, maybe this dancer could be helpful. Suppose I got into a language difficulty. Fiora!
Yes?
I've got to charter a plane to Goa. It's a business matter of great urgency. A fast plane. The very fastest sort of plane.
I will come with you.
Well, all right. If you insist, I guess, but...
Come. We will charter the fastest plane in all Karachi, and Kamadeva shall be our pilot.
Kamadeva?
In this land, Kamadeva is the god of love.
Fulora jabbered a few rapid sentences of Arabic to a dispatcher, then to a radio operator. Twice a plane had appeared, and we climbed in. More than 800 miles down the west coast of India lies Goa, capital of Portuguese India. Say Clancy and Singh had an hour's head start. It couldn't take less than 5 hours, and the plane we chartered was guaranteed to get us there in 4. I had a chance. All I'd have to do would be to get rid of Fulora, pay off the pilot, and find the offices of this guy, Piranda. Luck was back with me again. 4 hours, and we were circling down over the ancient city of Goa. I raced from the landing strip to the administration building. I wanted a taxi. I figured I could brush Fulora off as soon as I could find a taxi. A taxi, a taxi.
I beg your pardon, but aren't you Dr. Harry Lyme?
Well, yes.
Harry, where are you going?
Professor Lyme, is it not? The well-known archaeologist.
Oh, yes, but I really must apologize, old man. Taxi, I'm in a terrible hurry right now, you see. Taxi!
I can't tell you how I've longed to meet you, Professor. You see, I dabble a bit in archaeology myself.
Taxi! Taxi pulled up.
Perhaps you will be good enough to permit me to accompany you to the hotel, Professor.
I had no time to stand on ceremony. I pushed this archaeological crank out of my way and jumped into the cab. Driver, take me to Piranda's, do you hear?
Harry, don't leave me.
You know where it is, Piranda's?
Piranda's, si, senor.
Wait, Harry, what about me?
But, Professor, wait.
Me? I was cutting it fine. It took my driver a half hour to find Piranda's. What if those thieving scoundrels had beaten me, after all? But just as the taxi was turning into the street, I relaxed. There they both were, Clancy and Singh, standing on the sidewalk outside the shop, supervising the unloading of the crates.
Gently, boys, gently.
Yes, gently, gently, boys. Gently.
Harry!
Devil! Hey, you boys have rather inconvenienced me. Please, Clancy, don't reach for your pocket. As you may notice, my hand is already in my pocket. It isn't my pipe stem that is pointing at you. That's better. You may proceed with the unloading of my crates.
But, Harry, listen.
I know, you were just joking, just joking. Nevertheless, the penalty for practical jokes is severe. When my profits are involved...
Harry! You see? He's stopping them.
Yes, I guess you're right, my dear. I guess he is a fellow archaeologist.
A fellow what?
Certainly he is, Sir Suleiman.
Oh, what's this, Sir Suleiman?
Why, I thought you knew him, handsome one. This is the Sheikh Sir Suleiman Al-Hamid Beltimo.
Delighted, Professor. I had been looking forward to a chat the other evening, except that you were suddenly taken ill, I understand.
Yeah, yes. Well, yes, Sir Suleiman.
I must say, I'm most grateful for all your efforts at halting these brigands. You'll forgive me. For a time, I actually thought you were part of the plot to hijack my gold.
Yeah, and don't think you were.
Quiet. Yes, Sir Sullivan, you were saying?
Yes. Well, Fallura here insisted that her heart had never told her a lie, that her heart told her you were honest.
Oh, that's very good of Fallura.
Actually, my dear Professor, your melodramatic chase was unnecessary.
Oh?
Yes, indeed. As soon as you told Fallura back in Karachi that the name was Paranda, she found the opportunity to ask Karachi radio operator to send me the information. I was at the time flying from Kuwait, and naturally I radioed ahead to my good friend Paranda.
Your friend?
We've often done business together in the past. And he arranged to have some Goa police inside his place of business.
Well, what?
They're ready to take these two thieves in charge right now, I believe.
Aye!
Now, look here, Harry.
And a very good thing, too,
oh,
I must
Harry,
say.
Harry, does it not turn out well?
You're not getting away with this, Lime.
All right now, my men. Just move along inside the shop, please. Oh, by the way.
Yes?
Please accept this. A small reward for your friendly intervention.
Oh, no, Sir Solomon, I couldn't really.
No, I insist.
It's awfully good of you.
Dear Fallura, you make him take it.
Well?
Professor, you perhaps don't realize how valuable a shipment this was that you saved.
Oh, really?
I'll see you in a few moments.
We'll wait, Sir Solomon.
Fallura.
Yes, handsome one, come. We will see if there is a bank open which will cash the Sheikh's check. You see the reward for honesty, handsome one.
Yes. Yes, a slender return on investment, but a reward. Come, Moonflower.
Harry Lime returns in just a moment. And now, Harry Lime.
Well, I told you at the beginning of this story that I don't believe in Santa Claus. Well, after all, nobody ever left a gold brick in my sock. Unless it was there to sock me over the head. No, diamonds may be a girl's best friend, but Harry Lime's best friend is still... Well, guess who? Yes, you're right. Harry Lime.
Thank you.
The Lives of Harry Lime on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from April 4th, 1952. This is an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVelnier. Now a series that was inspired by the success of the movie To Have and Have Not, which starred Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. It was on the movie set where they first met and would later become married and had a great chemistry on radio as well, with this series called Bold Venture. The syndicated episode from March 26th, 1951, called Deadly Merchandise.
Bold Venture. Adventure, intrigue, mystery, romance, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Together in the sultry setting of tropical Havana and the mysterious islands of the Caribbean, Bold Venture. Once again, the magic names of Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall bring you Bold Venture and a tale of mystery, adventure, and intrigue.
All right, sailor, Havana, Cuba, where we started from, where we get off, out.
How long can you keep it up, Slade?
Come on, off the boat.
I said, how long can you keep it up? You've been sore ever since we left Key West. So we didn't meet him. So we didn't pick up his cargo.
Look, sailor, a guy named Scarn sends us a wire. He says, meet him in Key West. Move his cargo. I didn't want to go. You wanted to go.
All right. And Mr. Scarn and whatever he wanted us to bring to Havana weren't there. But we had a boat ride to Key West and back. You and me. That's nothing, huh?
Come on, sailor. Let's get off the boat. Here, I'll help you.
I don't need any help. What are you angry about? The money we didn't make?
No, it was time away from Havana. But I didn't have to be away from her.
You talk about Havana like it was a woman.
Do I?
How do you talk about me behind my back?
Walk ahead of me and I'll think of something.
There's your Havana, a cockfight.
Come on, let's take a look, sailor. How's your bloodlust today?
Oh, let's get out of here.
Consider it, sailor. Two birds with steel spurs slashing each other to pieces. Let's pause and cheer.
Come on.
Oh, let's watch for a while. People get to enjoy this sort of thing. Let's find out why.
I don't want to find out why. I'll see you back at Shannon's place.
All right. Okay, let's go.
You get a bang out of watching that?
Well, it gives me a chance to get bitter. Makes me an honest man.
Por favor, senor, senorita.
Huh?
The cockfight disgusts you, huh? See? Your tastes are too delicate, or perhaps...
What's this, Slate? A new way to catch the Yankee dollar?
Or perhaps the Yankee merchandise.
The lady asks you what this is, amigo. Who are you?
Permit me to tell you the story of my life. I am a poet.
I guess that's worth a dollar. Give him a dollar, Slate.
What are we, patrons of the arts?
Permit me to refuse the money. Permit me to return to the matter of the Yankee merchandise you have brought from Key West.
This is a man with a problem, Slate.
You are the people from the boat, the Bold Venture.
We're the people from the boat, the Bold Venture.
Now it rhymes. Nice going, sailor.
Then it is a simple matter. Since you are the people from the boat, it is simple. We will make arrangements for the removal of the merchandise.
Now look, Shelley.
Mario. My name. Permit me. That is my name.
Mario, sure. I forgot. My memory's a little shaky.
Mine, too.
Hers, too. So we're having a tough time remembering what this is all about. Slower reading, huh?
Are you trying to be clever, mi amigo? Or perhaps you have pleasure in tweaking my patience? The merchandise. Permit me, but the merchandise. It is a matter of life and death. When shall we remove it from your boat?
The poet only knows one poem, Slate.
Yeah. Wave him goodbye.
A fond farewell, Mario.
But it is a matter... You cannot. The merchandise. It can mean life. It can mean death. You cannot refuse about the merchandise! The merchandise!
you want to be happy and lead a king's life, never make a pretty woman your wife. Therefore, from a logical point of view, marry a woman uglier than you. A pretty woman makes a husband look small, and then he very often falls his downfall. Therefore, from a logical point of view, marry a woman uglier than you. Ah, Lady Sailor, Mrs. Slade, why you come back so soon to King Moses? Because you love me?
Why else, King Moses?
I tell why else. Because on trip to Key West, something sour must have turned more sour. Am I inevitably correct?
You are inevitably correct, King Moses.
You come back to make King Moses sloppy with happiness, Mr. Slate. Therefore, order me about.
Bring us something to eat, King.
Oh, an ecstasy, a joy, a frenzy, a kick.
Bring us something to eat.
Right now, Mr. Slate.
You really do love him, don't you, Slate?
Uh-huh. Like he was my own.
How long does it take for someone to be your own?
Ah, that depends. Ready with the food, King?
Ready. Yours, Mr. Slate. Yours, Lady Sailor. You talk, I smile inside myself. I get my guitar, I got song for you.
Sing it, King.
A lady approach who waits for sleep. A lady so handsome no one can hate. A lady who in hotel did register. A lady who bring joy, maybe despair.
Pardon me, Senor Shannon, but I think perhaps you were looking for me. For Bibi. No, Senor?
Oh, I don't know you, but I think perhaps I was looking for you. For Bibi?
Slate.
I want to explain something to you about the hotel business, Sailor. I am what is known as a mine host. That comes in two parts. Mine and host. Sit down, Bibi.
Gracias. Still you have not answered my question, Senor Shannon. You look for me?
Well, I look for a lot of things. Why particularly for you?
Because you are the man who brought his boat into port only a little while ago.
Oh, the lady wants a boat ride. Why don't you try the nearest tunnel of love, Miss Bibi?
This is included in the price we must pay for the merchandise?
No, Bibi. I throw that in for free.
Now, wait a minute. You said merchandise, Bibi. Isn't that what you said?
Yes.
Bibi, the gentleman posed a question. Will you answer the gentleman's question?
You know very well what it is we want.
Sure, sure, but let's hear it from your own red lips.
Now I understand. It's a matter of more money, huh? Well, we expected it, and we despise you for it. But we will pay it. I have room 6A. I will wait for you there. But give me 10 minutes to arrange for more money. When I pay your price, there will be no more delay. Is it final? It is final.
Let's see, 6A, she said.
That's what she said, Slate. That's just what she said.
You know, Sailor, I think I can handle this alone. Why don't you wait for me downstairs, huh?
Because I'm afraid of the dark. I cry in it.
That's what I thought.
Now you know. Slate, that noise. It's already happened to us once today.
Well, maybe the little lady's a bookie for gamecock fight. Hey, let's go.
Slate, look. Look. Her face. Her body.
Yeah. Slashed to ribbons. Slashed to death by a gamecock.
Slate. Oh, Slate.
Now, how do you like Havana, Sailor?
Mr. Slate.
Mr. Slate is wearing out his office floor, King Moses. Tell me, I'll tell him.
The police have made a farewell to the front door, Lady Sailor. They are 5 minutes gone.
Thanks, I'll tell Mr. Slate.
You want anything I can do for the after the police occasion, Lady Sailor? You, Mr. Slate?
No, I'll call if we want anything.
My guitar and me in hammock outside. You open the window and whistle for King Moses if you want something.
Slate. Slate. What are you trying to build? All right. I don't blame you, Slate. I know. It's hard to believe.
What's hard to believe? Beautiful woman killed by a fighting bird. A bird with steel spurs on it.
Now, Slate.
And at my hotel. Girl locked in a room in my hotel with a bird bred to slash for blood. I don't like cops in my place. Cops are for the tourist trade, not...
Is that all that bothers you? The fact that the police were here?
What's it to you what bothers me? I didn't ask for your questions. I didn't ask for you.
All right, Slate, all right.
Kind of a jerk am I, anyhow? A man tells me to take care of his daughter. So I take care of his daughter. You. What am I? Out of my mind? I don't need you hanging around here, sailor. I don't need anything about you. I got along great before...
Before my father died? What do you want me to do, Slate? Leave?
Well...
Sit down, Slate. You're sweating.
It's a trick I know. It's hot, so I sweat.
You want me to fan you? I'll fan you. You like me to fan you, Slate? Like this?
Look at you. The way you're dressed. Jeans, the way your hair is. Man has to walk toward you to know you're a woman. Why don't you do something about your hair, sailor?
What's the matter with it?
Other women with hair like that, they'd...
With hair like what? Like this? You can touch it, Slate. Touch it. Go ahead. Touch it.
Answer the door.
You answer it.
Yeah.
Better meet me.
Hey, it's the poet.
Tell him to come in. He can wave the fan.
An explanation for the events of this afternoon are in order. See?
Hey, well, don't make it tough this time, Mario. What are you trying to tell us?
A tragedy. The killing of the girl Bibi was a tragedy.
Well, what do you know about Bibi?
Bibi was the sister of my wife. She... Please, what time is it?
Hey, look, if you don't...
It's almost 2:30, Mario.
Gracias. Now, permit me. It is very wrong that Bibi is dead. A wrong that is part of an even greater wrong.
So help me.
What kind of wrong?
Like so. The merchandise you have brought. Those of us on an island you know, here in the Caribbean, those of us who wait for the guns.
Guns? So that's it. That's the merchandise. Guns.
Precisely. Perhaps there is a better way to purchase human dignity, but we do not know of it. We need those guns.
And you think we have the guns for your revolution?
Of course. Like so. You came with the boat. Oh, permit me. I will answer it. A compatriot I am expecting is to meet me here.
Mario! Slate! Help him! He's shot.
Yeah. Yeah, shot dead. Like so.
Back to Bold Venture. Our stars, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, and the second act of our story.
A lady, she come to Shannon's place, a delicate figure and clothes of lace. Then the lady, she died in Shannon's place. A gamecock with spurs, he slashed her face. A poet, he came to Mr. Slate, make big apology for being late. He explains his wants to Mr. Slate, but bullied in heart bring him poor to stay. Mr. Slade, he turned to Lady Sailor. He says, you know...
That's enough, King.
Do I call the police again, Mr. Slade?
No. Two people die in my place, that makes it personal. I like that poet.
You're not always a real tough man, are you, Slade?
I said I like that poet.
And that girl, Bibi?
And that girl, Bibi. What about her?
Did you like her, too?
She had a problem. She came to me for help. She died.
My father said you'd be a man like that.
Why don't you get out of here, sailor? Why don't you go back to the States? Look at the mess. I'm in it, you're in it. Why don't you leave, sailor?
You don't know, do you?
Mr. Slate.
Yeah, what do you want, King?
Here are the dead gentleman's papers from his pocket.
Oh, let's have a look. Mario Pavana, 64 Avenado Lorca.
We're going calling, huh, Slate?
When a man like Mario dies, somebody's got to tell somebody because somebody might want to know.
I would. I'd want to know.
Well, let's go to Avenida Lorca, sailor.
Yes? What is it you want, senor, senorita?
We come to...
Is it about Bibi? My sister Bibi? You have come to tell me of her death. It has already been revealed to me.
Just a minute, senora.
I am called Celestine. Will it not be easier for you so?
Yeah, easier. If you're Bibi's sister, then the poet Mario... Mario...
He's my husband. Yes, a poet and a husband. I'm fortunate, am I not? You are friends of Mario's?
Yes, friends. Sailor, I can't do it. You tell her.
Thanks loads. Senora Celestine, your husband...
What is it of my husband? What is it?
He's dead. Okay, sailor. How long can you take to tell a woman her husband's dead?
He said he was going to the waterfront to write me a verse. A little verse. Who are you? Are you of the police?
We're Mario's friends. We want to find his murderer.
It will not bring him back.
Mario was telling us something before he died. About a revolution. About guns.
Mario was to me a man who loved me. Who wrote little verses for me. Of this other Mario that you speak, I know nothing.
Who would?
Senor Etienne Parada, maybe? Senor Etienne spoke often with Mario, late into the night, while I slept. I would bring them food, and then leave them to talk among men.
Where would we find Senor Etienne?
He has a villa, 17 Avenida Cuarteles. I think there is nothing more for us to say to each other. Adios, friends of Mario.
Come right in, senor, senorita.
Is your name Etienne?
No, senor. I am the butler.
Where's Etienne?
In the auditorium with the rest of the guests. There is a concert. This way. In here. I will leave you. Adios.
Hey, some concert.
That girl, the way she's dancing, Slade. She's wonderful.
Yeah, real authentic.
Am I being rude?
Yes, yes, you are. Can't you see that girl's trying to express herself?
I am your host. My name is Etienne. This way, please.
Yeah, sure.
Celestine called. She told me to expect you.
Did she tell you about her husband?
About Mario? Yes, yes. Did you two kill him?
How's your record, Etienne?
Not flawless, senor. In here, por favor, this room. Pepe!
Hey, what is this? Who is this guy?
These are the ones, Pepe. The man and woman we have been waiting for. Now, senor, you will tell us. Why have you come to Etienne?
Because I don't like my hotel to be loused up with dead bodies. First a girl was killed and a poet. Would you know why?
Yes, yes, I would know why.
Who are you, Etienne? Why should you know so much?
It does not embarrass me to say that I am a patriot. You see, Bibi and Mario were revolutionary. They were killed by our enemies.
This we know.
They were killed to prevent them from taking guns across the Caribbean to our islands. The guns, they thought, were on your boat. We shall proceed without Bibi and Mario.
The man is talking like he's got the guns anyhow, Slate.
See, we have them. They came on another boat, not yours.
Well, use them in good health. Let's go, sailor.
Wait, senor.
I knew it. Peek over your shoulder, Slate.
I just did. Question, what's the caliber of the gun Pepe has in his hand? A 32 or a 38?
Looks like a 32.
It's a 38. You will help us, then.
Help you do what?
We have the guns. You have a boat. It's necessary to have both to get the guns to my island. Besides, I prefer not to have you roaming the streets of Havana until we have disposed of the weapons.
Who wants to roam the streets?
Me, Daddy.
E por favor, senor, move quickly. There is a great need to hurry. You admire the view, senor, eh? This cliff that screams down into the sea, or perhaps senor is afraid of such height. But the view is magnificent, no?
The guns are nice, too.
You have exquisite taste, senor. In guns, in boats, and
In me?
Precisely, senorita.
See how wrong you can be, Slate? The man said that you had...
Get off it, Annie Etienne. What do we play now?
Oh, no play, senor, I assure you. Hard work. Pepe is below in your boat waiting for the guns. You will see that he gets them. Then you will take us to our destination on your exquisite boat.
You mean I lugged them all the way from this cliff down to the boat?
Not quite so hard, senor. You see, we are prepared. A cargo net, winch. You place the guns in the net, then lower them to Pepe. Quick, simple.
Like pie. It'll be like pie, won't it, Slate? I'll help.
No, senorita, no, no. You will simply stand there. Because you will inspire the senor to magnificent effort. You may begin, senor.
So what happens when we're through here?
You will be killed.
Ask a silly question.
Oh, but it's so easy for you. You have but to die. Me, I have to commit a murder.
My heart bleeds for you.
Thank you, senorita. That's enough, senor, for one load. Lower the winch.
Aquí, Juan. Aquí.
Sí, senorita. Senorita.
We're glad you're happy, Celestine.
Yeah, we're glad. Thanks for saving our lives. It was messy, but thanks.
My heart is filled with kindness for you both.
We'll drink to your heart filled with kindness in Havana. Tell your boy to take that gun away and we'll go.
You were so kind to come and tell me of my husband's death. I want to do something gracious for you.
In Shannon's place. Do something gracious for us in Shannon's place.
I will not permit Juan to kill you. You will die as suicides.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Tell us about killing people, Celestine. Were you born that way or did it come on you all of a sudden?
They tried to make a revolution. You were foolish enough to stumble into it. It is a pity you stumbled into the wrong side.
You and Juan here are the right ones.
You are all alike. Poets, revolutionaries, adventurers. All with the intellect of trained fleas. Bibi, Mario, Etienne, Pepe.
Oh, yes.
Pepe is dead also. Juan took care of it.
Bibi was your sister. And Mario...
They were fools. They are happier dead. Now walk. To the edge of the cliff. Walk.
You're happy now, sailor? You're real happy?
What?
You came to Havana. You got what you came for, huh? Excitement, romance, a tropic moon, people killed.
You gone crazy. What are you talking about?
What you wanted, isn't it, sailor? That's why you came to me, because it was empty for a girl like you back there from wherever you came from. Real empty.
Why you...
Don't slap me, sailor. I'll break you in two.
No one. No. Do not put your hands on him. Leave them alone. Just keep the gun in his back. They will kill each other.
Sailor, watch it.
You watch it. He's got a gun in your back.
Have a gun in my back.
One. Careful, one. Careful.
The gun.
Get it, sailor. Pick it up. Now you, Celestine.
You let me go.
Don't struggle, Celestine. Relax. Enjoy yourself. I'm a tender guy. I'm taking you back to Havana.
Fool, take your hands off me. Let me go.
Celestine, I'm holding you real tight till the Havana police take you away from me.
You hold her that tight, she's not going to be in any condition for the police. So what about Juan?
Got a gun in your hand, haven't you, sailor?
Oh, sure. Sorry. I forgot for a moment.
Well, get with it, sailor. Keep that gun pointed at Juan till we get back to Havana.
Then what?
Then Shannon's place. Better back there. I'll want you with me.
Juan! How do you like it, Slate?
Like what?
Dancing with me.
It's all right.
I'm wearing a dress now.
Yeah, I noticed.
And my hair. You like it this way? You like my hair this way, Slate?
Let's get out of here.
I like it here.
Come on, let's go.
Go ahead. I'll find somebody who likes to dance.
I said come on.
Why?
Well, there's a breeze outside.
What's a breeze got to do with it?
I want to see what it does to your hair.
And so our two stars, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, have brought to a close our latest bold venture story. Special music was composed and conducted by David Rose. May we invite you to listen again next week at this time for another exciting adventure starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall together in Bold Venture.
Bold Venture, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of March, 1951. Wrapping up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.